What's up? What's happening? It's a Friday here on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. It's a Friday for you, too. That's the beauty of it. And some of you guys are like, I don't know. I got to work tomorrow. Guess what? It's still Friday. That's how the days work. Just what Friday means. For us, it's the last day. And it means 2 days for all of us until the Commanders take on the Giants at Northwest Field. That's right, Anthony. Their first game at Northwest Field. It's kind of.
You like the name of it?
No.
Okay.
Not as a name.
Okay.
I mean, good for them for getting paid.
You're just being technically correct about
what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to call it something else?
No, not at all. Not at all.
At the field in Landover. Do like they do for the Olympics where they get rid of the corporate sponsorships?
Yeah.
At Landover Stadium? No. It's called Northwest Field.
Yeah.
They're Northwest Federal Credit Union's paying a lot of money. And if we're not going to call it Northwest Field, we're going to call it the Fed.
Oh, yeah. The Fed. Yep. Yep.
I did kind of like that. We're going to see if that sticks. That was a J.P. Finley original, as far as I know.
You going to the Fed this weekend?
I am going to the Fed this weekend.
I was just making sure I used it correctly. Is that how you use it? You going to the Fed?
Yeah, although when you say it like that, it sounds like the Feds are coming. It's like going to the Fed. It's like, I didn't do anything, but the Feds are coming after me. I don't have to go to the Fed. I have to go to the Fed pen, if you will.
Oh, man.
Which is kind of funny. I've never thought about that. We're off to a real Friday start here. But PenFed is the credit union, Pentagon Federal.
Mm-hmm.
If you mess it up and then your FedPen, now you're talking about a federal penitentiary. And that would be bad. So you don't want to get your PenFeds and your FedPens messed up.
No. No.
But when we say on this show, we're going to the Fed, we have not gotten arrested by the FBI.
Yeah.
We're just merely going to Northwest Field in Landover, Maryland.
Yes, sir.
And there, Anthony, the Washington Commanders will take on the New York Giants. We start the show typically with what's at stake. I'll get into some of the X's and O's preview in a second. Some things that are interesting about this Giants team and kind of what I'm watching for from the football side of it after watching some of the Giants tape. And 6:30 today, you'll get a deeper dive into that with Logan. Of course, if you're like, I'm not going to be listening at 6:30, Craig, that doesn't do me a whole lot of good. The Take Command podcast is available for you right now with all kinds of stuff previewing this game. But, Anthony, I'm curious what you think. What's at stake for the Commanders this weekend? I have an idea in my head, but sometimes when I have an idea in my head of what I think is at stake, I'm curious to run it by others first and see if my level of importance matches other people. So what do you say in terms of what's at stake this weekend?
So I want to first start off by saying I don't view this as a must-win game. I think a lot of, you know, people on the internet and fans think this is a measuring stick, you know, must-win kind of game, and I just don't see it as that. And history also suggests, you know, when we do view it as such, those games don't really go in our favor. So I want to be more optimistic.
There
about
was that Code Red game one time that started off terribly and turned out to work out.
Well, I mean, there's that one. But all the other ones that have come long since, Kirk, not so good. But I think when I look at, you know, the game against the Giants, yes, it is a divisional game. And yes, it is a great chance for, you know, us to rebound. But I feel as though this is a game where we, you know, correct the things that went wrong in week one. We talked a lot about, you know, this coaching staff coming in, you know, being much better coaches, you know, for our players and things of that nature. And I don't think that was necessarily reflected in the week one performance. And it was the little things like tackling, playing fast, things of that nature. So I think this game is more so just to, you know, correct those wrongs that we had last week and then build off them, to be honest. And I think that'll ultimately, you know, help us end up getting a win against the Giants.
So we're kind of on the same page here in that I don't think, like, I think a lot of people are going to say, like, oh, this game is, like, crazy important. You can't start 0-2. And, like, obviously I'm not looking to start 0-2. That'd be nice to not start at 0-2. But I do think that it is, like, I don't think it's a huge deal if they start 0-2. And I guess I just have such a long view on everything that is kind of where I sit. Is like, not nothing matters, but it doesn't carry the importance of an 0-2 start in a season where like playoffs are the stated goal from the start. There's just a reality that this is a longer term vision that we're looking at here, and to start 0-2 would suck. And like, there's even a point, like some point of this where I'm like, start as bad as possible, get better as the year goes, and then you can have a better draft pick by the end of it, but also finish on the upswing and show improvement. There's like a sick, twisted part of my long-term brain that is like, that is actually the best outcome for this team, is like stack some early losses, dig yourself a hole, have faith that the coaching staff is good enough to get them out of it in the long run, and have you feel encouraged by like weeks 4, 5, 6, 7 winning games. You know, not that they're going to start 0-6, but like start winning some games more consistently in the back half of the season, but you did enough damage to your record to not be stuck with the 15th pick, and you have the 9th or 10th pick in next year's draft, and that's actually better for the rebuild in the long term. So there is like a little bit of that where it's not that I – like, in order to have given up on the season already, I would have had to have expectations. I'm willing to be pleasantly surprised, have them go out and beat the Giants, go beat the Bengals on Monday night if they're struggling and the Commanders figure some stuff out. And maybe that Tampa game was just the wake-up call they needed. And, hey, they go on a run and they're competitive in the NFC East. Like, that'd be awesome. That, for my selfish purposes, be as good as possible, Washington. Please, by all means, be our guest. Go be competitive. But I think, realistically, I just kind of go into each game this week looking at it at its own thing. What's at stake? A step in the rebuild, a step in the recalibration, a step in the ability for Dan Quinn to show that he can get a team turned around, that Joe Witt Jr. can coordinate a defense, that Cliff Kingsbury can call good plays, that Jaden Daniels can continue to learn and grow, that if you want to use Dan's words, right, you take the lessons that were available to you last week in the game that everyone had to learn, and you learn them this week. I know there's a lot of, you know, there's both a competitor's mentality that if you're a player, that ironically matches up with, I think, a lot of fans' mentality here, that like, it's a game. What's at stake is a win. You played, you know, Herm Edwards is on line one. You play to win the games. But I do think that where they are right now and what we saw week one, realistically, with the kind of the talent gap, if you will, the talent like hole they were digging out of, and seeing like some of the areas where they might struggle more than we even thought, that I'm willing to just be like, make it better, whatever better means. Now, I will say the Giants being a bad football team certainly means you can be not that much better, and you're not going to have Daniel Jones likely do what Baker Mayfield did to you last week. You're not going to have any of their receivers do what Mike Evans and Chris Godwin were able to do. Andrew Thomas is actually pretty good at left tackle. He's not Tristan Wirfs, but the rest of their line is not very good. Definitely way better than it was last year, but that line in Tampa is really good. And so it's just a different kind of challenge. And then schematically, like, Liam Cohen was in his bag last week, the Tampa OC, and Todd Bowles was in his bag. Shane Bowen's bag as the DC for New York is not it's not, I want to say, like, he's not a bad DC. It's just not nearly as complicated. It's not as deep of a bag as Bowles has. Now, will they try some of the stuff, try to install it? Yes, but, like, when you've been practicing at all camp and it's who you are and you're, like, the Todd Bowles team doing the Todd Bowles stuff, it's different than the Shane Bowen team trying to do some of the Todd Bowles stuff. So even if they try to mix it up a little bit, I don't think it'll be nearly as sharp. And then on the other side, like, Kafka and Daboll, they can ball. Like, those two dudes are really good, but I don't think they knew who they are offensively right now. I don't think they have an identity based off what happened last week. Their offense looked clunky as hell. So I'm optimistic that a solid performance can produce a win. I'm very optimistic that they're going to compete this week. I'm hoping that it is not just a dog dookie terrible football game that we've had so many Commanders-Giants games be over the last 5 years. But realistically, if it is, and all the bad stuff is bad again, then the long-term project, it doesn't really deter me over 2 weeks. It's going to have to be a lot longer than that before I'm like, yeah, these guys really aren't up to all the talk that they say. At the end of the day, like, you know, two games is two games. I know it's a larger chunk. It's not like you're playing two of 162 in a baseball season, but it still is just two games. And once you don't care as much about the record, saying it's just two games becomes, I think, a lot easier. 980, we're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, let's dive into the matchup and why there's one particular New York Giant who could make things very, very difficult for Jaden Daniels on Sunday. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Ready for Week 2, Commanders and Giants. We'll preview it with the Giants Insider coming up at 5 o'clock. Of course, we'll go around the NFL at 5:30 as well. But there's a couple of Giants who are, you know, talented, but frankly not very productive NFL players who turn into absolute monsters against the Burgundy and Gold. We'll talk about them in about 5 minutes, but I want to start off talking about one player who has been an absolute monster against everybody. And that player, Anthony, is Sexy Dexy, the big fella. Big ol' 97, Dexter Lawrence. It is kind of a rude awakening to being a Washington Commander for Tyler Biadasz. It's not anything specific to Washington. I just imagine him, you know, signing his contract, being really excited. He's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go play for DQ. Like, really like DQ. You know, I loved practicing against him. His intensity is fire." He probably had a relationship with Dan. That's the kind of guy Dan was. I'm sure he had relationships with offensive players. And a center is a really valuable guy to have a good relationship with if you're a DC. Talk about protections. Talk about things that he's looking at. Get his perspective on the game. And he comes and he's like, "All right, let's. I wonder what this schedule is gonna look like." Oh, cool. Week one, Tampa. A 3-4 with a nasty nose guard in Vita Vea. Okay, that sucks. Week two. Wait, we're playing another 3-4 team? I got a pure no. I got Dexter Lawrence. Who did I hurt? Who's trying to hurt me? Because they might be the best two pure nose tackles in the league. And the challenges that they present are incredibly difficult. But despite playing the same position, they do present things slightly differently. Last week with Vea, you've got a guy who is, one, he's bigger than Lawrence. Not that there's a lot of human beings walking around who are, but he is definitively one of them. He is a monstrous mountain of a man who is also supremely quick and strong and powerful and twitchy, and he also moves around bit. So he might start heads up on you, helmet to helmet, in that true zero, you know, nose guard position. And then right at the snap, he jumps to a shade. So now he's on your shoulder. Or he might jump over a full gap and be, you know, over towards the guard. He is going to stunt and twist, and they're going to do all this stuff. The good news for Tyler Biadasz and to an extent, Sam Cosmi and Nick Allegretti, is that Dexter Lawrence is going to be pretty straight up on as a nose guard. He's just going to be there unless they're in four down fronts, in which case he will be, you know, in that one technique, probably maybe playing some three techniques. So he'll either be between kind of the center and the guard or between the guard and the tackle. But either way, like, he's there. You block him straight up. The problem is doing that sucks. And for a team that wants to have some presence running the football vertically up the middle of the field and also wants to make sure that they're in positive down and distance, like, not being able to reliably get even 3 yards to be in second and seven is a detriment to the offense. And so figuring out for Cliff Kingsbury how to consistently make sure that they're in good down and distance, to make sure that the pass rush isn't able to get after Jaden Daniels, to make sure that you're in good rushing situations, to make sure you're in situations where your play action game is available to you. Because if you're in second and 14, that play action's not going to be super effective. Teams don't care if you get to third and 11, even third and 10. They do care if you're in third and three. So if you rush for 3 yards on first down and you're in second and seven, and the threat of a 4 yard carry gets you to third and three, that is going to be more effective in terms of the pull on the linebackers, the safeties, and trying to hit some kind of bigger shot, open up a little bit bigger window off the play action game. But Dexter Lawrence can make it so you're second and nine, and now all of a sudden you're second and long, and you're in a big, you're in a bad way. He can also make it so you're in second and 11 because he gives you a tackle for a loss in the backfield. So poor Tyler Biadasz last week. You know, as a center, you just don't see that many nose guards line up right across from you. Last week he's got Vita Vea. This week he's got Dexter Lawrence earning his money. That's for sure. But Dexter Lawrence is awesome against everyone. The question is, in this new defense for Shane Bowen, how good can Kayvon Thibodeaux be? And Kayvon Thibodeaux has been an absolute nightmare for the Washington Commanders and basically no one else. He has 15 and a half career sacks total. 5.5 of those are against the Commanders in 4 games alone, including the 2 games last season. That's it. I mean, he's what, like a third-year player, so it's his career against the Commanders is the 2 games each year, 5.5 sacks over those 4 games, and I'm pretty sure, like, of the other 10.5 sacks, like, 10 of them, or of the other 10 sacks, like, 9 or 10 of them are against, like, third-string tackles. He doesn't beat starting tackles unless they were named Charles Leno for the Washington Commanders the last 2 years. Now, some of those were not Leno's fault. Some of those were Wink Martindale had an absolute field day against Scott Turner and Eric Bieniemy. They just were not ready for the quasi-unsound blitzes that Wink Martindale brings. Wink is more all-in than anybody that's ever coordinated a defense in the NFL. He will leave his back end exposed. He will leave his secondary players on islands. He will leave guys, it feels like, just wide open in the name of let's get after the passer and hope that the blitz gets home and the quarterback can't figure out where the open guy is. And that is not how Shane Bowen operates. So some of those sacks for Kayvon Thibodeaux came from, hey, Sam Howell slides the protection the wrong way. Thibodeaux's unblocked, and all he's got to do is run straight to Sam Howell and tackle him. That kind of stuff is probably not going to be available this week for Kayvon Thibodeaux. So can he actually line up against Brandon Coleman and Cornelius Lucas and beat those guys one-on-one? Andrew Wiley on the other side. Because now you have Brian Burns in the fold as well, who's actually kind of a similar rusher, better version, but great athlete, not the most polished rusher. But you do have to account for those guys. Obviously, Lawrence inside. Their linebackers are really, really good in Okereke and oh, God, I'm forgetting the other starting linebacker, but he's good. Micah McFadden, I think. Anthony, yes?
Yes, no? Yes. McFadden is
Anthony's
one.
Giving me the head nod. Yeah, so they're talented up front. They're not as talented in the back end. They're young. They're scrappy. Deontay Banks is a solid player. I am low-key excited. This might be my low-key storyline of the week, Anthony. Remember last year Deontay Banks and Terry McLaurin were talking quite a bit? Like, Banks was... Yep. Banks was yapping,
mm-hmm.
And Terry was basically like, if I ever get a quarterback, I'm going to murder you.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's sort of kind of how it went.
Well, I think Terry's got a better quarterback now.
Uh-oh.
He's a rookie. We'll see. But I do. Jaden seems like the kind of guy that if Terry goes, Jaden, bleep the play call. I don't think Terry would do this. But Terry looks at Jaden and goes, bleep the play call. I would like you to just throw me the freaking deep ball. Like, make sure the safety's not going to clean my clock. If it's single high, I'm going deep. Screw the play. Throw me the ball. I'm going to moss this guy. I'm going to end his life. I think Jaden will throw it. And by the way, Cliff is going to probably dial up some shots. They're going to test them. And so it's going to be fun to watch that matchup. But the other guy, obviously, that I'm talking about earlier in the segment that has been just a different human being when he faces the Commanders than the rest of the league is Daniel Jones, who is 5-1-1 against the Commanders, 10 TDs, 3 interceptions, completing almost 70% of his passes. This is for a guy whose completion percentage last week was in the 50s in week one. Here's going to be my question kind of this week on that side of the ball, and we can get into some of the matchup stuff later, obviously, how this offense is going with Malik Nabers, without Saquon Barkley, how it looks a little bit different this year, some of the key guys to watch out for. for an offense that was pretty dead in week one and why it was so dead. But for as good as Daniel Jones has been against the Commanders, he's been poopsie against the Cowboys. Been awful. And remember, last year they won the two games, like 89-17 combined scores. So one question I'm going to ask Ryan Dunleavy, who's a Giants insider, is going to join us coming up at 5 o'clock, is around, was it Florham Park, I believe is their version of Ashburn, around the Giants building this week, has the talk of the offense been more, we're facing the Commanders and Daniel Jones might turn into Commander Daniel? Or are we facing a Dan Quinn defense where this has gone very, 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 very poorly in the past? Clearly, hopefully, Washington can benefit from Quinn's experience and Joe Witt's experience. Obviously, it would help if you had like Micah Parsons and Trayvon Diggs and some of the personnel they had. But that is kind of the key question on the Jones front going into the game. More preview as we go here on the Hoffman Show. Coming up next, let's do this. We're still tinkering around with our finish Friday. We finish our week by making predictions. We do it at 5:30. Let's have you guys make some for finish Friday next, because last week's finish Friday, we didn't like that version.
It didn't work on Sunday. Yeah.
It didn't work on Sunday. It kind of went like the Commanders' attempt to finish on Sunday. Bad news bears. So, who you got in the game and why? 301-230-0980. This is much more straightforward. We're finishing Friday with predictions. Ours coming up later in the show. Yours next. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live as well on the free Odyssey app. 301-230-0980 is the number on a finish Friday here on the Hoffman Show. Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Your predictions for the game here to finish the week, you can give them to us at that number, 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. And then we will also, this segment, depending on how many calls we get here, possibly talk about the Tua Tagovailoa situation last night in Thursday Night Football. Good note. By the way, Anthony, real quick before we get to the phones, a note from Chief Editorial Officer Chris Russell. Chris Russell. FYI, DJ Hurts' for second meeting last year and outside of Sunday Night Football Week 1 last year, his numbers are not bad versus DQ. Not bad. So, my bad on that. On Daniel, how dare I besmirch the great name of Daniel Jones? That sounded way more sarcastic than I wanted it to be. Now I want to look up Daniel Jones' career numbers against the Cowboys.
He plays well against the Cowboys?
Let's see. Daniel Jones' career record against the Cowboys is 1-7.
Nice.
He got there. When did Quinn get there? 2021? He was okay in let's see. He went 17 in 2021. This 2021. He was 5 of 13 for 98 yards. Looks like he might have gotten knocked out of this game. So that's not great. Then he went 20 of 37, which is a 54% completion percentage for 196 yards, zero touchdowns, and one interception. That's not a very good outing in 2022. And the second outing in 2022, he went a better 21 of 35 for 228 and one touchdown. And then Sunday Night Football to open 2023, he was certifiably booty. 15 of 28 for 104 yards, zero touchdowns and two picks. I'm going to say I was right the first time. I feel good about that. He's never beaten Dan Quinn. The end of the 2020 season was his only win against the Cowboys. And that was before DQ got there. So he's 0-4 against Dan Quinn. Chris, I know you're listening. What are you talking about? Those numbers aren't good. Oh, Anthony's on the phone. Is this, Russell didn't call in, did he? No, we got people with predictions. Okay. No, Russell
Chris,
calling in.
Chris Russell did not call in. I was getting my man Casey right, you know?
Okay. Yeah. We'll get to Casey in a second, but he was the second person to call in, and we tried to go in order out of fairness. We'll see if Chris Russell does call in to argue with me, as I have the numbers right in front of me and just read them to everybody. But, yes, Daniel Jones was only responsible for one of the two 40-point losses the Giants had to the Cowboys last year. That is correct. Finish Friday here. We get your predictions, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Let's go to Doug in Richmond. Doug, thanks for calling. Who you got in the game and why?
Appreciate it, man. Greg, you got off of work, so this is great to have a little conversation with you. I got us winning and a nail biter, 21-17. I believe more in this coaching staff. Just, I want to see the defense get better week to week, because they talk about finishing. They talk about taking an extra step to get it instead of lunging at guys. So hopefully that works. And I guess against the lesser competition, that's good. And then on the offensive side, it's a more simplistic defense. So I think Jaden can go kill it.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the hope. Thanks, Doug, for the call. That's certainly the hope, I think, is that you can get, a much simpler defense that's not only going to help Jaden see and be able to make some of the throws that he may have passed up last week, but that he can, have better protection, and some of the other issues that kind of popped up last week for the whole offense are a little easier to navigate. All right, let's go to Casey. Casey, thanks for calling on a Finish Friday. Who you got in the game and why?
What's up, Hoffman? I got the Redskins winning 24-17. The reason why, I believe the Giants' secondary is horrible. Another thing, if Malik Nabers doesn't play, it'll be much easier. Well, Forbes is out, but still, Malik Nabers, if he's out, it should be much easier. The Giants' running game is horrible. Should be able to stop it. The only thing it falls on is Jaden Daniels to cook.
Sorry, what was the last thing you said?
I said it just leads to Jaden Daniels. I believe Jaden Daniels will cook this Sunday. It's a kind of a revenge game.
Oh, he'll cook. Yeah. Yeah, Casey, thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, man. I definitely think that's a possibility. Not having is, obviously Bucky Irving killed them last week. So the lack of what seems to be like the lack of a running game, definitely not ideal for the Giants side of things. But for Washington, they have less to worry about schematically. They have less to worry about talent-wise. And so if they can just raise their performance a little bit, then that should be enough to win, you hope, based off who the Giants are. Okay, forget all that. Chris Russell has called in to defend himself. He says that I am besmirching Daniel Jones' name despite the fact that he's 0-4 career against Dan Quinn. Russell, what do you have to say for yourself?
Hi, Craig. How are you?
I'm good, Chris.
So I want to point out, I didn't say he was good. I said he was not bad outside of that Sunday night football disaster week one. And you just read some of the numbers, and I'm not going to tell you again that he was good. What I will say is, in that first matchup in 2022 against Dan Quinn and the Cowboys, he wasn't great passing, as you pointed out, 20-37, but I think he had one touchdown, no interceptions, if memory serves me, but he had a pretty big rushing day. And then the Thanksgiving Day loss in Dallas, I thought he played pretty well from what I remember about that game, and I think statistically that bears fruit. He missed two of the six matchups with the Cowboys while Dan Quinn was the defensive coordinator, which has been Daniel Jones, quite honestly, his biggest problem, is he hadn't been able to stay healthy. He hadn't been able to stay on the field, so... And I don't think he's healthy right now. I think we're asking a lot out of Daniel Jones to be like 100%, to be ready and to be running around against blitzing aggressive defenses like Brian Flores and Minnesota when he's a half a year removed from a torn ACL.
I think that's totally fair. I am looking at all of the games, and yeah, okay. There's the one game where the Cowboys won 23-16 in September of 22, where Daniel Jones, to your credit, did have 79 yards rushing. Was that the game that he had the really long carry and then fell at the end?
I don't think so. I thought that was against Philadelphia on, like, a primetime game, but I
it
might have be been. Wrong.
I know it was a divisional game, and it wasn't against Washington, but that is obviously the quintessential Daniel Jones play. Oh, look at the talent. Look at the him literally falling short.
No, listen, I want to be clear. I am not arguing Daniel Jones is good enough. I was surprised because the narrative in my mind was that Sunday night game, week one last year, oh, he's been terrible against EQ and Dallas. Terrible. Awful. You know, just dreadful. And then you look in the numbers and you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that Thanksgiving Day game where, yeah, the Giants lost, but they actually played reasonably well, and he played reasonably well in his one really good year in the NFL.
Right. And I do think your point, Chris, that's probably more important than any kind of past history is what is he currently right now? Like, he's not fully – I mean, 100% of Daniel Jones is only so good, and he's not 100% of Daniel Jones. So,
that is a great way to say it. That's why you are the wordsmith that you are.
Why, thank you, kind sir. Hey, I appreciate you listening to the show as always and having a little fun with us here on a Friday. Have a great weekend, buddy. And actually, will I see you in the press box?
Yes, unfortunately for you.
I will see you on Sunday, and I will be there in time to participate. I will not be late this year because I'm not doing pregame anymore. Denton and Liddell have it handled.
That's right.
So I will be there. I will be there early. No nachos in my seat. Please.
I'll try not to spill any cheese sauce this year.
Thank you. I very much appreciate it. Chris Russell, everybody, a gentleman and a scholar. Thank you. Oh, he's gone. Okay. Daniel Jones. I think that's yes, Anthony. What would you like to add?
Was that the game I think you went to where he spilled the nachos?
Well, I went to most home games last year, if not almost all of them.
Oh,
and for those that don't know the story, we don't need any more Daniel Jones analysis. We've lost the thread. It's fine. This is funnier anyway. So we, last year when we did the Take Command pregame show, and again, Denton and Linnell got you covered pregame this year. I'm actually going to join the guys somewhere in the final hour of the pregame, I think either noon or 12:15 on Sunday from Northwest Field. We at 12:30, so like near the very end, we're getting closer to kickoff. We'd always have Grant or Danny on. We kind of rotated through a lot of folks on the station. We had, the Junkies did some stuff for us. Sheehan joined us earlier in the show, and then we rotated Grant and Danny at the 12:30 spot. And when we always did Grant for home games because Grant was also at the games in the press box. And we were doing some bits with Grant about Russell. And as the call is ending, as we have Grant live on the phone, Logan and I are doing the pregame. Grant's like, oh my God, Russell just like, I'm pretty sure it was while he was on the phone, or maybe it was right after we hung up. He's like, Russell just spilled nachos all over your chair. And sure enough, they got pictures, and there was a picture that hung up in the studio for a while.
Yep.
That Essig blew up and put there because that is the most Matt Essig thing that has ever happened. and then, when I got there, luckily it had been mostly cleaned up. You could kind of see a little bit of a stain on the carpet, on the floor. It wasn't.
What a time.
It wasn't Chris's best moment, perhaps. But he's had plenty of great ones.
Yeah.
God bless Chris Russell. God bless Chris Russell.
I have just one memory of Chris Russell, and I'm not sure who he was working for at that. I mean, I think he's working here, but he was also working while at the game. And he just in the studio. I mean, well, he's in the booth or like the area.
He does the updates for, it used to be CBS, now Infinity Sports Network.
Yeah.
And he's Chris Russell's volume knob got broken and stuck on high somewhere in 1998. And so, imagine sitting right next to him when all of a sudden he's like, yeah, Zach, blah, 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 blah. And we're all like, whoa, okay, we're awake. We're awake. We're up. It's a good time. We have a lot of fun. It's a press box full of bits. It's a good time, but we're all also there working, trying to have fun, watching what has been some disastrous football the past bunch of years, but hopefully we get a much better product. Maybe we'll be a little more serious if the product is good on Sunday. Probably not, But maybe. You're not coming to the press box on Sunday, are you?
No, I like to watch the game from home.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I will make my way down to the press box once or twice, but I prefer to watch it at home.
Okay.
I got some meal prepping I got to do.
Gotta very important. Get that done. Yeah, no, I will be there, and then as soon as like all the post game locker room access is done, Logan and I will do our Take Command post game show from the stadium like we did last year, so folks can be on the lookout for that. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, we will preview the other big sporting event for the weekend. There's actually kind of a series, if you will, starts tonight. And you'll hear it here on the, or part of it here on the Team 980. Then back to Commanders Giants coming up at 5 p.m. We get back to Commanders Giants with a Giants insider. Ryan Dunleavy joins us coming up at 5 p.m., just about 10 minutes from right now. But could the Washington Mystics be in control of their own playoff destiny by the end of the night? The answer, very simply, is yes. Tonight, the Mystics take on the Atlanta Dream. They will play again, actually, on Sunday. But let's just get to tonight first and set the stage for this huge matchup. Now, unfortunately, this game will not be here on the Team 980 because it's an Ion game. But there is plenty of WNBA action tonight to keep track of if you are on a lock-in. Fire up the old multi-view. League Pass, like, League Pass is like $12 or something ridiculous for like the whole year, Anthony. If you could probably buy League Pass for like $5 for tonight and it'd be worth it. I don't even know how it works though, because the games are on Ion, and so typically it's regional coverage. I don't know how you watch all the games tonight, but worth figuring it out. If at the very least, find yourself a scoreboard situation, watch the Mystics on Ion, because that game will be on here in the DC market, and keep an eye on Minnesota and Chicago, because very simply, Anthony, if Minnesota, who's one of the best teams in the league, beats Chicago, who's coming off getting absolutely dump-trucked by the Mystics on Wednesday, if that happens, Minnesota beats Chicago, the winner of Atlanta and Washington is tied for the 8th seed. Both teams currently one game back of Chicago for that 8th and final playoff spot. And then, if that doesn't get any better for both, frankly, Washington and Atlanta, Chicago's got Phoenix, who's also ahead of them in the standings and a better team, on Sunday, while Washington and Atlanta play again. So, by the time we reconvene on Monday, there is a chance that the Mystics, if they can sweep the Dream and Chicago goes 0-2 against teams that are better than them, the Mystics would hold that playoff spot on their own with a one-game lead entering the final two games of the season.
It's crazy, man, considering like where we've come from. But I guess it's not all that crazy just because you look at a team like the Indiana Fever, who got off to like a 0-0
terrible start.
Yeah, a super, super terrible start. And now they're like, you know, one of the better teams, hotter teams in the league. So I think it just speaks to, you know, the season just being a long season. And, you know, Washington, again, like we had a whole bunch of injuries to, you know, deal with. And we've done all season long was, you know, battle. And, I mean, that's all you can really, like, ask for, to be honest, like just to go out there and compete. But it's crazy, man. It is crazy. And it's funny how, you know, the end of the season even played out like this. I think you mentioned it yesterday, how, you know, all three of these teams, the Sky, the Dream, the Washington, are all playing one another with
it's
the
like
playoffs
crazy
on the line.
Round robin to end the season.
Yeah.
Because when Atlanta's finally done with Washington on this back-to-back Friday, Sunday, of course, they then get Chicago.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of other good teams on these schedules because, like, it's not like, oh, sweet, if the Mystics can just get through this weekend. Well, then they've got the Liberty and the Fever to close out, so they could get this lead and then very easily give it right back up.
Mm-hmm.
While Chicago and Atlanta play each other in that third game, and then they've all got, you know, they all finish against other teams. And for Washington, again, it's Indiana. That game's next, it's the 17th. I think it's Wednesday or Thursday.
The 19th.
Whatever day the 17th is. Or is it the 19th?
I think it's
the 17th. No, I think you're right. I think it's the 19th.
Yeah, next Thursday. Next Thursday they play
so next
the
Thursday,
Beaver.
Next Thursday, and that game's at Capital One.
Yes, sir.
So that should be fun. We might, if the playoffs are on the line, Ant, I think we might do the show from there that day. So TBD on that. We'll check out what happens over the next couple of days and check with the boss man and with the sticks on that. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild to think that this team is here considering they were the last team to get a win. They've had so many injuries all year and they've just kept fighting. And we talked with Brittany Sykes about it yesterday on the show. If you missed that towards the end of the program, definitely worth a listen. Slim is a fantastic interview. And she joined the show, talking about these matchups and talking about how they've just stayed the course, at 6:30 yesterday. So you can check that out in the Hoffman Show podcast feed, or we put our women's sports content at Hoffman W Sports on YouTube for all the on demand stuff. But, and this Atlanta team's good, but they're also incredibly inconsistent. They're led by a young star and an aging star, Tina Charles, who is a former MVP, is still really, really talented, and she's kind of their stalwart in the middle. But they've also got Ryan Howard, who's a young star in the league, multi-time All-Star, 3x3 Olympic medalist. She's a fantastic, you know, shot creator and scorer. And, you know, obviously Brittany's got that matchup tonight, and we'll see if she can limit Ryan. Like, how does everyone else do? Can you, and then like, where's the scoring come from, which has been kind of the thing this year. Sometimes Washington's got it and they can put up huge point totals. Other times it isn't there because their defense, I feel like, has been far more consistent and obviously really, really good. Like, it's even been solid when Brittany's not out there, but Brittany Sykes, who might be the best individual defender in the league, when she's out there, it goes to a different level. So going to be fun to watch tonight. Of course, I won't actually have the chance to watch it live because I'll be at another game that's at 7:30 tonight. I'm still in Indianapolis for Fever and Aces, so I will be in the building tonight seeing if Caitlin Clark and company can get revenge after the Aces beat them on Wednesday. Of course, also on the line tonight, probably not tonight, but who knows, with Asia Wilson. Asia Wilson, 50 points shy of becoming the first ever WNBA player to score 1,000 points in a season. So how close can she get? Let's mess around and find out. She had a big night the other night, so it's going to be fun to see that one tonight. It's a huge, actually, night in the W. Tons of games on the schedule. Mystic Streams, Aces Fever, Storm Wings, all at 7:30, as is Sky Lynx, and then Sun Mercury wrap it up at 10. And again, if that's not enough for you, Sunday, Dream Mystics again at 3 o'clock, so fire up your second screen if you're watching Commanders Giants. Flip that on, and, you know, depending on what happens tonight in Chicago, that game could be to have a lead for that eighth and final playoff spot in the WNBA. When we get back to Commanders and Giants, though, we're joined by Ryan Dunleavy, Giants insider, for Not My Beat here on the Team 980.